Okay, so today's Mishnah in Perek Teisha about the Kaveret in Ohalot is Mishnah Beit. So we continue. Remember that we have 14 Mishnayos about this Kaveret before we get to the next Sugya. And because of that, it's important for us to establish exactly what kind of Kaveret we're talking about. And remember that all of the variables in these 14 Mishnayos were part of the variables of the placement of the Kaveret. So we had two fundamental issues. Is the Kaveret whole or is it broken? Then we had other secondary variables. Is the Kaveret on its side or is it standing up, so that it has a petach facing upwards? And the other variable is it, if it is on its side, is it above the ground by a tefach, or is it flat up against the ground? And then we had another variable, is the mouth of the kaveret facing inside of the house, or is it facing outside of the house? And then we had also, well, we didn't really discuss this one, but there is another very important variable, and that is there room on the part of the kaveret that is inside of the house? Is there an entryway for bees? Remember, a kaveret actually normally is a type of artificial beehive where you provide a place for the bees to settle, and then you're able to harvest the honey. And so it's very often you've got an entryway, a little window on the sides that allow for the, one of them says entrance, one of them says exit, you know, so the bees don't bump into each other. And this way you've got two of those holes. And therefore, there's always another issue. The other issue is that since you would have those holes on the bottom of the kaveret, so then even if the front of the kaveret, which is the mouth of the kaveret, you get into it, is outside, if those holes have a tefach, so then they would allow tuma out into the house, assuming the tuma was in the kaveret. So all of those different issues have to be taken into consideration. I'm assuming that we missed the walk this morning in Tzfat because of the rain. I'm just being melamed schus, because otherwise it was a terrible hefset. I got to tell you that visit to Binayahu on Erev Shabbos, because of the Haftorah, was like so amazing. It just made the whole thing come together. Fantastic. Okay, so now that we've got all of those situations understood, and we were speaking about in the first Mishnah, where the kaveret was not a tefach from the ground. Now, since the kaveret wasn't a tefach from the ground, you have to imagine, the case was it was lying in the doorway, it was on its side, the opening of the kaveret was facing outwards, and therefore there was no way for it to actually bring tuma into the house. If it would have been a tefach above the ground, and there would have been tuma under it, so then the tuma would have followed the area under the kaveret, because remember that even kalim can be mavius atuma, so it would have followed that tefach into the house. Okay, so what we had therefore in the first Mishnah was pretty restricted, because over there the tuma would be ritzutza, and it wouldn't have gone into the house, it would go straight up and down. However, it would not have penetrated the kaveret, remarkably. Why is that? Not because the kaveret as a kli is able to prevent tuma from getting into it because it's chotzeitz. Oh, no, no, no. The reason that the tuma wouldn't get into it is because it would have been, for all intents and purposes, a kli cheres that was mukaf tzomit posil. That's why. How is that? Because since the opening of the kaveret was facing outwards, so therefore it had no opening that was shayach to the tuma in the bayis. And the outside of the kaveret, being as the kaveret is a kli cheres, is not shayach to kabbalas tuma. So there would be no way for the tuma to penetrate it. Exactly the same as if it had been inside the house, but it would have been completely sealed, which would have achieved the same thing. And that's a Chiddush HaKra, that even something that is not an Ohel can prevent Tuma from getting into it, even though it can't prevent Tuma from getting out of it, as opposed to an Ohel, which would do both. So remember, what we're going to be doing in the context of these 14 Mishnayos is really getting straight the detailed distinctions between Kelim and Shivrei Kelim, and Kelim that are Mechubra to Ohelos, and Kelim that are themselves Mukav Tzomet Pasil, not Mukav Tzomet Pasil, openings that are considered to be places that allow Tuma out, but that don't allow Tuma in, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of details and a lot of uncertainty among the Mefarshim about how to learn these details, how to understand these details. So I'll mention some of the variables as we go along, but I think it's best to take a pretty consistent approach, which is basically not, it's the approach of the Rav, I think, we'll take, and it is not the approach of the later, I say later, the more modern Mefarshim that have different ideas of how to make this work. So, Haita Gavoa Min Ha'aretz Tefach. So now we're up to Perek Tesha, Mishnah Beit. So now, what about if the Kaveret was lying on its side, was facing outside of the house, and the only difference between this and the Kaveret and the first Mishnah is that this time it was lifted above the ground with a Tefach. Now, that, of course, creates an Ohel for purposes of being Mavias Atuma, which means that the Tuma would be allowed to follow it along into the house. So then, if Tuma Tachteha, so if we have a Kizayis of a mace, let's say, anywhere that's under this Kaveret, or vice versa, we have the Tuma inside of the house, and now the fact that there's a Tefach in the Kaveret, which is going through the doorway, that will allow the Tuma out of the house, right? So if the Tuma is under the house, or it's in the house, or even if it's above and it's on top of the Kaveret, then everything would become Tame, except what's inside of the Kaveret. Hakol Tame, everything would be Tame. So if the Tuma is underneath it, then it's very obvious, right? If it's underneath it, so then it just simply goes along, follows into the house, fills up the house, and since anything underneath is Tame, so then even though you do not have Tuma in the Kaveret itself, but remember that the Kaveret cannot be an Oyel that is Chotzetz Bifnei HaTuma because it's a Kli. So what we have, and we've seen this many times, is we have an area where the radiation of the Tuma continues, but the radiation itself has to flow around, so to speak, and then come back to the top because it can't go through the actual Kaveret because the Kaveret is a Kli Cheres that cannot be Mekabel Tuma and it's Book of Tzomit Pasil. But that doesn't prevent the Tuma from radiating, continuing upwards, and therefore, even if it's on top of it, it's still going to maybe as a Tuma. Now, let's assume that the Tuma is inside of the house, and this Kaveret is a Tefach above the ground. So then, obviously, everything under that Kaveret is going to be carrying that Tuma, but in the weird situation we have over here, since it carries the Tuma under itself, Tuma tunneling, exactly. I think we even compared it to that, that it would literally be, we'd compared it to Joseph's injunction, that it's possible for it to simply suddenly appear on the other side, which is tunneling, and that's exactly what the Tuma would do. And what happens over here is that if there is a Tefach, then the Tuma comes underneath the area that is the Tefach above the ground. But what we didn't think of is that once the Tuma comes under that area, then that Tuma is considered to be actually there. It's not just that it's Metame things. It actually fills it up with Tuma, right? The same way it would in the house proper. But then what prevents that Tuma from now going upwards? Only the fact that it's underneath of a Kli, but a Kli can't prevent Tuma from going upwards. So even in that case, it's going to go and be Metame, even what's above it, and not only what's inside of the house. In the event that the Tuma over here is on top of the Kaveret, and it's on the part of the kaveret that is outside of the bayit. So now, the kaveret is not considered to be chetzetz bifnei hatuma, right? But it is mevius hatuma. Oh my gosh. So let's imagine what happens over there. Over there, you have a direct radiation of tuma that hits the underside of the kaveret without going through it, right? So it tunnels to the underside of the kaveret. So even though the inside of the kaveret is not going to become tame, and even though the kaveret is not considered to be chetzetz b'tnei hatuma, but it is mevius hatuma. So therefore, if it's mevius hatuma, it will even be mevi radiated tuma, which now touches the under area of the kaveret, brings the tuma into the house, and allows the tuma now to extend all over on top of it by having spread it out. So we've got a radiation, a spreading, and then backwards radiation back up again. This is like a completely new thing that we never saw before. Now continues the next Mishnah, Perek Tet, Mishnah Gimel. All of the above is based on the assumption that this kaveret has a way of allowing tuma out of it into the house in the first case when it wasn't actually a tefach above the ground. Over there, we've got no problem. We understand how the tuma is getting in. What wasn't clear is how in the world did the tuma get in the first Mishnah, if there was tuma inside of it, that it should be considered to be allowing the tuma out into the house because it is tame and has spread the tuma along itself in the inside. Where did the tuma get out of the inside through, since the opening is on the other side? So what we're talking about over here is that, first of all, it has to be a kli. This entire discussion is only talked about where it wasn't broken into pieces, because that would have changed everything. It's because of its status of a kli, plus that it is mechulchelet. Mechulchelet means that it is a kli that has openings. It's got these little openings for the bees, for the exit and entrance of the bees. And it would be very different, because that would allow the tuma to go out through the tefach al tefach entranceways for the bees. So that therefore, if there's tuma inside, then it's going to allow the tuma out. And it also would provide for the fact that this would be a kli that was mukav tzamit pasil, and that would not allow the tuma to get into the inside of it. Okay, but let's imagine a different case. Let's imagine a case where it was broken. Hayta pechuta. So suppose it was not a proper kaveret any longer. It was busted, and it didn't have also windows, we're assuming, even though it doesn't say so, but we're assuming that this continues on the contrast at the beginning, and it was pikuka bekash. So it now has, even where it's broken, you had a little bit of straw that you put into the area that was broken, and that itself is enough to make it a non-kli, but is not enough to make it into a kli because it has something there. So then let me explain. Or suppose there were windows in it, but they were afutsa. The windows themselves were afutsa, which means that they were sort of blocked. And what do I mean by afutsa? I mean that you don't have an actual opening inside of the house which has a tefach, which would allow the tuma to go out. So now, if those issues have changed, then the following is the halacha. I just want to mention to you that the achronim have a very different way of reading this that has no mokar in the rishonim that I know of, and that is that when it's talking about over here, mechulchelet, or afutsa, it is using those words in a very strange way. And what it means is that it is loose. Mechulchelet means that you can roll it, you can be mechalchelet, you can push it in and out, meaning that it's not up against... What? Yeah, same type of usage. Yeah, something that, you know, flows through something else. So if it's mechulchal, it doesn't mean that the kli is mechulchal. It means that the kli is in the opening of the house in a way that is mechulchal, meaning that it's not stuck up against the actual doorway. Because what they understand is that the way that we are using this kli to actually bring the tumah in is because it was a continuation of the oihel of the doorway, which we saw before, that even if you have a kli, that if it's up against the door, or if it's up against a wall, it's considered to be an extension of the wall. We had this in the area we put a kli between the upper story and the lower story, so over there it becomes part of the house. But that leads to a totally different approach to these mishnayos, and I much prefer following the traditional approach. So when I say ezui afutza, I mean there's no tefach to allow the tumah through. So let's discuss the same two cases that we had in the second Mishnah. Is it lying on the ground or is it lying a tefach off of the ground? Okay. So now let's talk about the way that the first Mishnah was. That it's lying directly on the ground and the kezayis min ames is underneath the part that's on the ground. So then the halacha is that kinegdo ad hatahom tameh. So anything that's under it is certainly Tame, because that's Tumah Ritzutza, and Tumah Ritzutza goes all the way down into the Tahom. However, the problem over here is that it cannot go up. Why can it not go up? And this is the reason that they put in Afutza, or Mechulchelet, is meaning connected. So the reason it cannot go up is because since over here, it's not a Kli, we look at the broken pieces of it, as if they are simply pieces of wood or straight pieces of material. Now, a straight piece of material is going to prevent tumah from going through it, and therefore it no longer acts as a kli, it now acts as an oel. Fine. So it prevents the tumah from going up. So that's a change. And if it's al-gabar, however, suppose the kezayis is on top, then everything going up is considered to be radiated by the tumah, and there's nothing to stop it, and it's all tameh, but everything underneath it, and everything that would have otherwise been spread, is tahor, because there is no way for it to spread. Let's say that the kezayis is not underneath the actual kaveret. It's inside of the house. Fine, so then anything in the house is tameh. Anything else is tahor, because there's no way for things inside of this thing, or under this thing, or on top of this thing, to become tameh. Let's say that the kezayis is inside of the kaveret. So then the only thing that is tameh is the area inside of the kaveret. Because since we now see it as not a kli, but as an ohel, so then it stops the tumah from going outside of it. And it doesn't have an opening of a tefach anymore. And the idea over there is that if you've got something, we saw before, if you've got something that is loose, it is enough to stop tumah from getting into. But in this case, you would think, we said that you put in a bunch of straw, so why doesn't the tumah come in through the window with the straw? So that there's a lot of discussion about. The simplest answer is that this case is different than the workable kaveret, because in this case you mean it to stay there, and therefore if it stays there, even though it doesn't fix it in terms of the din of the kli, it fixes it in the sense that it's considered to be a real closure to the window. We had this earlier, remember, when we talked about a window that's facing an area where somebody is passing by with a mace. So over there, if it's filled with things that are going to stay there permanently, which are not makabel tumah, remember we talked about the kash that was in the window, and we said if it's talking about kash that hadn't been mukshar makabel tumah, or it was no longer edible, and it's no longer able to be makabel tumah, the only determining factor was whether it was meant to stay there or not. So in this case, it's considered to be meant to stay there, so it makes sense that it would prevent the tumah from coming into the bite.